Entertainment. This is Penguins Live, presented by Trib Total Media on Penguins Radio 24/7. Back to your host, Brian Metzer.
And welcome back to Penguins Live, presented by Trib Total Media on Penguins Radio 24/7. Joining me now on the line, the great Mike Colligan. You know him from colliganhockey.com now that he just launched recently. We're going to talk to him about that. And, of course, you know him from Forbes Sports Money, a number of other outlets, and on Twitter, at Mike Colligan. Mike, thanks for taking the time today. Greatly appreciate it.
Brian, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. I'm sorry we missed out on chatting a couple weeks ago, but it's good to get you on today. And it's always fun when you and Adam Gretz join the same show, too. That's almost too much hockey knowledge for one show.
Saturday night, hockey night in Canada, I guess, so back-to-back, but I'll happily be the early game and let Gretz clean up with a better performance later. But yeah, it's interesting. I think we were supposed to talk recently, but a lot has happened since then, and I think it's only going to keep getting more interesting as we head closer to the March 2nd trade deadline that's just a few weeks away now.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going to be a pretty fun 3 weeks just looking at what all the teams are going to do and what the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to do as well, which we'll talk about a little bit here on the show. But before we jump into any of that, I wanted you to give you the opportunity to promo the new website and also mention some of the other outlets you're doing some work for right now.
Oh, yeah, that's great. I actually started my own site at colliganhockey.com, and it's going to be a one-stop shop, I think, for all the content that I'm doing. You mentioned I've been contributing at a lot of different sites. I'll be starting to do some CBA and salary cap analysis for waronice.com, and that's a site that's really taken off, I think, in the last 6 months, and that's what attracted me to working with them. They've been doing a lot with the advanced stats movement and trying to get some really good information out there for fans to work with and use and get more insight. So I'll be doing some support of their CBA and kind of their rebuild of the Cap Geek site, if anyone followed that as far as salary cap and salaries go. So lots going on, and like I said, my site will certainly cover all of that, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where all this fits in. And I think the NHL is planning to add some more statistics to their site even later this month, so that'll certainly put more information in the hands of the fans, and I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike, and that's something I wanted to ask you about today. How surprised were you, or excited maybe, to see that the National Hockey League is going to start to embrace advanced statistics and add them to their site in terms of the statistics that they track, and is that going to maybe hurt some of the mom and pop type blogs and websites that have been covering it so great greatly over the past couple of seasons?
It's a great question, and one I thought about this afternoon, actually, as I was thinking about that launch and what that will look like. And even I was thinking, you know, what type of names will they use? There's all these confusing names out there like Corsi and Fenwick and everything else that have really just been more come up through the underground nature of these statistics. But I can't see the NHL really going with that and the confusing, ambiguous nature of having those names. I wouldn't be surprised they kind of roll out their own vocabulary. So that'll be interesting. I don't think it's going to mean the end of kind of the mom-and-pop sites. I think they'll always be ahead of the curve just because it's so tough to move a big tanker ship like NHL.com and get everything approved and organized and onto a site like that. So I think there'll always be a lag effect from that perspective. But I think what it'll do is it'll give us a good, clean, solid source of information, and that's really the starting point. If you can get that into the hands of the common hockey fan and really help them start to learn and understand it, because I think you would agree that many do not at this point, or many just don't know what to make of it. So it just like in baseball, as that movement was underway and as fans got smarter and smarter, we saw how the level of conversation and the level of interest in baseball from a statistical perspective certainly took off. And I don't think hockey's anywhere close to that. I think they're at least 15 years behind baseball, but I think we're starting to see that move. And now that's not going to make hockey into just a numbers game, and I don't think it'll be boring by any means, but it'll just give us new insights and new angles and new perspectives that we haven't had before, and I think that's only a positive in my mind.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. The National Hockey League has always been very proactive in terms of, you know, just thinking more forward than some of the other leagues. I think they've done a nice job of even letting more non-traditional media outlets sort of cover their games and open the door to a lot of different people. So this wasn't a big shock for me. I think it's great to see them embrace it because, as you just said, Mike, there's a lot of folks out there that probably don't have a good understanding of advanced stats, maybe use them incorrectly, and having some people over at NHL.com maybe focusing on it as well, I'm sure you'll start to see it pop up more in some of the writings and things that happen over there as well, or otherwise I don't think they'd actually be rolling them out. Is that how you see that too?
Right. I think, and think about even with Sportsnet and their massive deal with the NHL in Canada, you know, we don't get much exposure to that, but to those hockey fans who do get a chance to watch a game on Sportsnet, they're really playing with a lot of the same things, and they've invested a ton of money in that deal with the NHL over the long term, and so now they have a vested interest in making sure that hockey is presented in the best way possible, and they've got roaming cameras, they've got skating speed, all kinds of interesting things that they've been experimenting with this season. And I think, again, those are all good things when you have these big corporate dollars backing innovations and improving the entertainment product. It's something that was pretty standard in the NHL for about a decade. You know, we didn't really see the presentation of the game change a whole lot after the glow puck of the Fox days, which flopped quite a bit. We just really haven't seen much in the way of new stuff, and I just sense this season that's a bit of a different story.
Oh, wow, the glow puck. That was an interesting way to watch hockey back in the day, and I don't think it's... You know what's funny? I was shopping recently, and a guy came up to me and was talking something about some hockey, and it was an older gentleman, and he said, I can't watch the game. I love that glowing puck. I haven't watched it since they took that away, and I thought that was kind of funny, so I figured I'd share that with you since you brought it up.
It's just amazing, you know, and what people are attracted to, and I think that was the whole goal, was that people, especially the older generation that maybe couldn't follow the puck on what at that time was standard definition screens, I think it was that was the goal, was to help the common fan be able to at least see where the puck is. But now with HD television, there's certainly no need for that. You can see where the puck is. You can see the sweat on every player. That's changed quite a bit. But I think these new technological advances will just give a sense of what's Sidney Crosby really good at. You know, we see him score goals and points, but there's so many parts of his game, like his shot release. If they could somehow quantify that, we saw a goal this weekend from him where he has, I think, the quickest snapshot release from in front of him of anyone in the league, and there's just no way to really put that into numbers or prove or disprove what I just said at this point, but I think we're quickly approaching that time where we'll start to have some of that information.
Yeah, we're in a pretty fun time in history, I think, where some of that stuff is going to start to become a reality, so we'll have to keep our eyes peeled to see what they end up doing here. Let's switch over to a little bit of Penguins talk here before I ask you a couple other league-related questions, and I think I've been enjoying the column you've been doing over at the Pens blog, too, because you sort of answer a number of questions that fans may have posed or even have just popped up in recent days. And I guess the first would dovetail nicely with the piece you wrote last week about Evander Kane potentially being on the trade market and maybe an option for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Just talk a little bit about how maybe he would have fit in here if it was an option for the Penguins. And do you foresee Evander Kane, even injured right now, still moving at the trade deadline to somebody, or is that something that's going to have to wait to the offseason?
That's a really interesting question, and that's another one I was thinking about earlier today, in that you'd think that Winnipeg would just sit tight now and wait until the draft and say, hey, you know, we'll wait until multiple teams are interested, because now there's you're basically ruling out any playoff team from a potential trade with Kane's being out for 4 to 6 months with the shoulder surgery. But I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think you're going to have a team like Buffalo that, you know, they don't want to add a piece at the deadline that's going to put them at risk of not getting their lottery pick and having a chance at one of the two great players that are going to be in next year's draft. But they're looking for long-term stars. They're looking for superstar potential. They have a lot of assets that they're looking to give up, and Winnipeg is in the midst of a playoff race, and Winnipeg's looking to get better right now. They want to get assets that Buffalo potentially has. And so it's a deal that Buffalo could make. They wouldn't get any better in the short term here, and therefore would lock in their pretty dismal season. But it would also give Winnipeg quite a bit in return, and I just think that's a potential deal that might make sense. And so from that sense, I don't know if the Evander Kane trade talks are totally dead at this point. I think it's a lot of teams have been ruled out, but it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks here, especially when the Sabres are saying they've got potentially 6 to 10 guys that are available for trade. that could certainly happen.
You know, I think Tim Murray's got to lower some of his prices before he starts being able to move some of these bodies. That's all you keep hearing is that he's asking for the moon for some of these guys, and you know they're going to be active at the deadline, so that will be one to definitely keep a watchful eye on to see, especially if you enjoy the trade deadline like I know you and I do. You talked about Thomas Greiss today in your column that you wrote, and I know a lot of folks have been a little disappointed from what they've seen from him, and I know he just doesn't get a whole lot of playing time, and it's hard to come in and be motivated enough or actually sharp enough based on not playing a whole lot. But I guess as a backup goaltender, you've got to learn how to do it. But I don't think he's been so sharp in his last few starts. Do you think he is in danger of maybe them looking for another backup goaltender at this point? Or is this a guy that I think Jim Rutherford spoke highly enough of him? He's probably still invested and believes in him, but you can't have your backup go out and cost you 2 points every time he plays either. Not that he got a very good effort in front of him in Vancouver.
That's right. I think it was an all-around letdown game, and about 5 minutes into that game, I thought, man, I should have seen this one coming, because it was just a tough stretch. A lot of successful games early in that swing, but you knew that was one they were just teed up to have a letdown. And, you know, as far as goaltenders go, 2 weeks ago I wrote in a column about some of the younger goaltenders. When you think back a couple years ago, like Corey Schneider and Jonathan Bernier and Anders Lindback, all these guys that were backups but were highly regarded, and it was just a matter of time until they got a chance to be a starter somewhere else. And some of them did very, very well, like Corey Schneider in New Jersey. Others, like Lindback, have struggled quite a bit, and they were exposed as not the high-potential goalie they were once thought of. And, you know, Greiss is a perfect example of that. And what I said in the column 2 weeks ago was I am not good at judging potential goaltenders, and I don't think that many people are. You know, when I look at these teams and how they manage, goaltending is such a different animal and a tough thing that I think it's getting tougher and tougher to figure out every year, especially when you're projecting where these young kids will be 4, 5, and 6 years from now. But Greiss was a guy I thought was very good in Phoenix. The time that he was there and some of the opportunities he got, I think he was in San Jose as well, and performed very well. And you would have thought, hey, this could be a really good backup goaltender, potentially a guy ready to move into a starter's job. But that hasn't happened yet. I think you bring up a good point about backup goaltenders, and sometimes they aren't getting the activity and the action that they need to really get into a groove. And I know for some goaltenders that can be very tough. For others, that's not an issue. So it's such an individual position, and when you only get one opportunity every 3 weeks and you're put on the spot, put right into a big game like that, a lot of things can happen, and we certainly have seen kind of the downside of Thomas Greiss as of late.
Well, to talk to your point there, Mike, about some being able to project these goaltenders, it seems to me that anymore, that position in general probably has more late bloomers than any. So it's funny. You see a guy maybe almost wash out of the league in some organization. Someone takes a chance on him. I guess Mike Smith comes to mind and out in Arizona now, even though he's not having a good season right now. But they get into the right spot, and then they thrive. And it's weird, because that's just, such a quirky spot for a guy to be playing in. They're always a little bit weird. They're a little bit different. But it's interesting to me that so many do bloom a little bit later, would you think, or I think so, compared to other positions, per se.
And think about the draft and Marc-Andre Fleury being number one overall. I mean, if you look back at the last few drafts, I would bet there'd maybe be two goaltenders taken in the first round, if that. They're not even taken in the first round, let alone first overall,
yep.
Because I think exactly that dynamic where you're talking about a kid that's 17 years old and you're trying to predict, as you said, if most of these goaltenders are kind of late bloomers, this guy's not going to be an impact goaltender till maybe 23, 25 years old. I mean, look at Carey Price. He was highly regarded as a fantastic goaltender, and it took him a number of years to kind of get his legs. And finally this year, I think he's fulfilling the potential that everyone thought he once had, but it took a long time to get to that point. And so it's a question of, you know, do you overpay for goaltending when so many of these guys are really good 1 year, like Mike Smith, and then a year later they can't even keep a starting job? So do you commit like Phoenix did, or Arizona, I'm sorry, to a long-term deal with a guy like Smith when you know you could get burned? We saw that happen in Philadelphia with Brizgalov, and we've seen it happen across the league. Do you just rely on a numbers game and bring in a number of guys and hope that you kind of hit the jackpot with one of them? And if you do, you have them on a cheap contract and can get a year or two out of them before they go and get a long-term deal elsewhere. I don't think I've seen a model that works really well, other than maybe Los Angeles, who seems to be churning out. Not only Jonathan Quick as a starter, but some good backup goaltenders in Jonathan Bernier, who went to Toronto, and now Martin Jones. That might be more luck than anything, but at least they've had solid goaltending in both of those positions for a number of years now.
Yeah, that's there's some franchises that seems to just grow goaltenders. I guess Anaheim's like that as well. Now, Mike, we have just 1 minute left already. It's amazing. We chipped through this time. But I wanted to get your take quickly on the World Cup of Hockey. The league finally does it. They announce it. And we may even have ads on jerseys. Any surprise there?
It all sounds like revenue to me. As a guy that looks at the business side of it, I just hear revenue. I hear the owner's pockets being filled, especially when we're also talking about potential expansion franchises and $300 and $400 and $500 million fees that might come along with that, relocation fees. The NHL finding ways to grow and seeing how they can get some consistent revenue to come in. Now, the question is, where do you keep finding those things? You know, the Winter Classic's not going to be what it once was 3 or 4 years ago when it was still kind of shiny and new. That thrill's going to wear off a little bit, and they're going to have to find new things. I think the World Cup of Hockey is kind of that next phase. They're looking for something to excite the fans. It allows them to disconnect a little bit from the Olympics, maybe make a clean break as far as the next games go. But it could be fun. That's going to be interesting heading into the season and really kind of get you going again coming out of the summer. So I'm curious to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for us all to watch some early September hockey. But, Mike, thanks for this as always. I always enjoy the hockey talk with you. And we've got to make a point to get you on a little bit more often now. But I'll continue to hype up colliganhockey.com for you.
I really appreciate that, and happy to hop on anytime.
All right, Mike, take care. That is Mike Colligan. You can find him on Twitter, at Mike Colligan. As I said, colliganhockey.com, the Hockey Writers, Forbes Sports Money, and a number of other outlets. So go and be sure to follow him. Always great stuff from Mike. When we come back, it's Adam Gretz time from CBS Sports Eye on Hockey Blog, and we'll talk with Adam next on Penguins Live, presented by Trib Total Media.